Won't you spare me over to another year?
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. No matter how you frame it, you light it, you script it, we are all facing the final act. The inevitable, the void, game over. No matter how ungently you rage against the dying of the light, one day the bell will toll also for thee. So why is something so universal and natural so difficult to talk about directly? Why do we say deceased or passed on or reached the end or gone to a better place? Why can't we just say the words?
Oh, happy Dacca. This is my sheath. There, rust and let me die.
Dr. Veronica Culler and her colleagues at the University of Lancaster in the UK are examining the language that people use to talk about death and dying. They interviewed doctors and hospice managers and patients and family members to find out how they describe the end-of-life experience and why.
Some of the most prominent metaphors that are used for end-of-life, dying, terminal illness, etc., are journey metaphors. Being on the cancer journey, being on a long and hard road, but also being guided by others on the path. Then there's a lot of what we could broadly call violence metaphors, such as the battle with cancer, showing some fighting spirit, but also being defeated by the illness. And then we have a couple of alternative metaphors which people have developed. For instance, around music, where they say the cancer cells are like parts of an orchestra that don't play in tune, and the treatment is made to make them play in tune again.
Dr. Culler and her colleagues have found that these are not empty figures of speech, but powerful expressions that can comfort families and embolden patients. But they can also shade the truth and mislead communication. That said, I can't help but wonder, why is it so important to understand how metaphors frame the final days of our loved ones or even our own lives? Why is it worthy of such deep investigation?
Because the assumption is that how we talk about something metaphorically to some extent reveals how we think about something. So metaphor is seen as a window on the mind.
Are there any particular metaphors that you found did somehow ease the trajectory or the experience of death and dying for any of the patients or their families?
There is no one metaphor that can make it easier. There is no one metaphor that is good or bad in this end-of-life care context. It really depends on who uses the metaphor how.
Okay, then. We're going to put it out there plainly. Today's show is all about death from many different angles. For all of our differences across demographics and cultures and rankings and approximate indicators, one number is certain. The death rate is holding at 100%. It's not really something you can predict, but you can plan for it. Barbara Bates-Sidorek is trying to change the way that people plan for and talk about and deal with death. She's president and founder of Lasting Matters and author of a planning tool called the Lasting Matters Organizer.
My mother died suddenly 8 years ago. I got a phone call the morning after I spoke with her, and my brother said, you know, the mom had died, and with that started a flurry of activity and decisions that had to be made and tasks to be done. And we really didn't have any map or guidance from my mother because we had never had those kinds of discussions. We knew that she wanted to be cremated. That was, but that is actually one of the decisions that a lot of people don't know when a parent dies or a spouse dies, and it is a big decision. Do you want to be cremated or do you want to be buried? You know, we had to make a decision about autopsy, whether we were going to do that or not. But there were not a lot of conversations that we had had that would help guide us. So there was a lot of guesswork involved and a lot of family meetings. And it all has to be done within a very short period of time after somebody dies. So it made me think there's got to be a better way to deal with this, and there's got to be a way to help other people plan for the inevitable.
Everyone's situation is very unique, but there must be some commonalities. Any stories that can help illuminate the kind of questions that you really have to ask and have to answer at that critical moment?
I would say the first critical issues that you have to make decisions about are whether somebody wants to be cremated or buried, and whether they want to have a funeral or a memorial service. Those are big decisions. Also, knowing whether your loved one has donated their body or organs. If you don't know that, and I heard a gentleman who actually had cremated his father, and then 3 months later, going through his father's desk, had found a folder with specific instructions about donating his body to a research center, and it was all laid out. And he had already cremated his father. And so they're left with the guilt and the problems of having not known that information before somebody dies.
Yeah, and you can only do this one time.
Once somebody is dead, the conversations stop. You can't get that information anymore.
What are some of the other big decisions that need to be known at that moment?
Well, honestly, I think that it's really important to appoint a person as sort of the family organizer so that you keep siblings from possible infighting or problems with hierarchy and decision-making. A list of people that need to be notified is also very helpful. I heard a story about a family who had not alerted the cousins that lived in Canada that their father had died. Oh. And all of a sudden, after the funeral, they said, uh-oh. And it created a big family discourse. Having that list would be wonderful. There's so much information that each of us carry in our heads day to day that is neither communicated or documented. Really, I wrote this organizer so that it takes away all the guesswork.
Just PIN numbers. That's something I had not thought about.
Well, passwords are a big deal in our digital age, and you have to have the ability to access accounts in order to close them after somebody is gone.
Okay, so decisions, details, and documents. That's another one of the big D that really matters. What are some of the documents that you have to have?
Hopefully, and that's not always the case, that your loved one has been to an estate planning attorney and there's a will and a trust, but you need to know where they are. The location of documents is really important. Whether you have a deed to a cemetery plot, deeds to real estate, putting it all in one place and telling them, I have this and here's where you can find it, is such a gift.
Well, Barb, the thing is, death is a very difficult subject. I mean, a lot of people think it's morose, or maybe they're suspicious about talking about death. What are some of the ways to approach it that make it a little bit easier?
I liken planning for the end of life and for death as like I would plan for a trip or a wedding or the birth of a child. We spend a lot of time making plans and sort of checking the boxes and crossing your T's and dotting your I's when it comes to all these other plans. But we have a difficult time when you start talking about end of life. So my attitude is that I want people to have the conversations, but even if you're not willing to have the conversation because you're uncomfortable having that conversation with your spouse or your aging parent or even an adult child, you can simply sit down with the Lasting Matters organizer and fill it out quietly so that you are giving them the information that they will need and you don't necessarily have to have that conversation.
I know because I read Lasting Matters that your dad is still very much alive, although your mom has passed. I wonder, have you gone through the organizer with him?
Yes. In fact, I could probably honestly say I started writing it for him because after my mother died, I started bugging him and saying, Dad, I want to know all this information about you before you die so that I don't have to scramble and I don't have to guess. And I will know exactly how you want to be honored and who you'd want to speak at your service and what music and what flowers. So in a way, this is a gift to him, but it's a gift for me because I'm hoping he's filling it out.
Barbara Bates Sidorek, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Barbara Bates Sidorek is president and founder of Lasting Matters. And for full disclosure, I've been following her blog for ages and am among those featured in the trailer for her book, The Lasting Matters Organizer. You find a link to that and much more on The Organizer at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.
Mama, take this badge off of me. I can't use it anymore.